From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Schneider of IndieWire and Variety, and this is The Spinoff. Joining me on the podcast, as always, is Mr. Joseph Adalian of Vulture.com. He joins us from Adalian Studios in Henderson, Las Vegas, Nevada. Joe, hello.
Hail the glorious leader, Mike. Hail the glorious leader.
dear leader, exactly. Is he listening? Also from Vulture joining us on the show this time is TV reporter Maria Elena Fernandez. She's here with me in the KCRW basement. Maria Elena, I'm glad we finally got you on the show.
Yes, finally. Hooray.
I was starting to take it personally.
No.
You could never make it. There was always something going on.
You were taking it personally, my fellow Vulture, Mikey. Yes, the Vulture takeover of the KCRW. Spinoff is here.
Well, thank you.
It is my pleasure.
Thank you for joining us. So first time for all of us back in the room in 2017 and first time taping the spinoff with a new president officially at the helm. Normally that wouldn't be relevant to a TV podcast, but of course these are not normal times, guys. Hold me. So Joe, anyone who listens to this podcast or follows you on Twitter knows you're the TV ratings guru. You are the man with the numbers. And this week, actually, you wrote a piece fact-checking the White House press secretary. Did you ever imagine your world would collide this way? This is something that you've been sort of focusing on for a while, and now suddenly, this I think is going to permeate everything that we do, including covering television.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed that Sean Spicer didn't come after me for my story. Damn it. He did. I know Brian Stelter and some other people. We live in very odd, interesting times, and we've got a president who's incredibly obsessed with numerical measurements of his self-worth.
Yeah, which, by the way, you and I remember from back in our days at Variety, where when The Apprentice first came on, and we would get faxes from Donald Trump and his office, either complaining or celebrating our ratings stories done by our guru Rick Kissel, depending on how that story went.
Right. You know, my colleague Mark Harris, who wrote a great column for Vulture the other day, talks about the fact that, you know, this is somebody who sort of very much is in the Hollywood bubble still. And, you know, it's sort of cute when you have a TV personality faxing and calling reporters to spin his own reality of TV numbers. I mean, that's a very sort of common thing in television. Like, there are plenty of network executives who live in a similar bubble, who have their publicists put out press releases about how show A did 15% better than show B, and that supposedly means that show A is a success, when we all know it's really not. And it's sort of cute and sometimes annoying when that happens there. It's a little bit different when it's the commander in chief and the ostensible leader of the free world, although one could say that's now Angela Merkel. It's a little scary. And I think our job as journalists, though, is to simply point out the facts. And that's what I try to do with this. I mean, it was a silly argument. The fact is, Donald Trump had a perfectly respectable tune-in for his inauguration.
It wasn't the biggest. It wasn't the biggest of all time. And that's what he needs it to be.
Right. And so it's just, it's simply stating the facts. And I think that's, it's particularly important because the way this president will reach people is not unlike Ronald Reagan. He's going to go directly to the people. But that was also, there were different times, there were innocent times. And, now the danger for this POTUS as he tries to model himself on Ronald Reagan, and I do think he does see himself as the second coming of the Gipper, is that it's much easier to fact check. There are so many more outlets. While the big three outlets, the ABC, CBS, and NBC, which were around at the beginning of Reagan's administration, remember CNN just signed on the first year of his, or the right before his inauguration, they used to have much more influence, so they were more powerful. But now there are so many more. And that's, the bad side is that none of them carry the same weight except for Fox News, which is our state TV network. But there are also more ways to sort of fact check. And I think that's what's really important and vital right now.
Right, right. So that's the good news. But like you mentioned, on the flip side, it's now easy to avoid sort of mainstream media. And there's a big percentage of the population that's only listening to far right content and never actually getting seen those fact checks, never actually seen those fact checks. Maria Elena, let's get you in the conversation. I'm sure you're experiencing what I'm experiencing, which is now these days when you talk to creatives in Hollywood, it's hard not to talk about this. I mean, this is what's on everyone's minds. And ultimately, every conversation with a showrunner, with a star, seems to eventually enter the Trump zone. What are you finding now in talking to folks around town?
Yeah, I mean, it's no secret that this town is very liberal and is very disappointed in the results. And so you end up in a lot of interviews having at least a 10 or 15 minute interlude where you're both kind of consoling each other and fretting about the world. But, you know, more to the point of how it's affecting, you know, the actual content and product, you know, we've already seen shows that have dealt with it head on, like Black-ish, which had a great episode looking at how the family was dealing in the months after the election and how it was affecting their workplace. The Good Fight, which is going to be premiering soon on CBS All Access, they basically ripped apart their first episode, and it begins with the election of Donald Trump.
That's the Good Wife spinoff that's coming soon.
Correct. Yeah. It begins with the election of Donald Trump, and they've now set up the law firm that's in that show, which is owned by African-American lawyers. They're going to be afraid that their government contracts are going to be up and stuff because of the new administration. And Diane, who is the feminist in the show and very much of a Hillary supporter, she had a photograph of Hillary in her office, is very torn apart by the new administration. So they're going to deal very much with it in the show. And I think, you know, that even on Jane the Virgin, for example, they're going to be doing Latino voter. There's going to be a character that's going to be focusing on getting numbers up for Latino voters and registrations up, you know. So I think you're in small ways and big ways, you're going to start seeing it everywhere.
Well, it's a fine line, right? Because on one hand, I think people want entertainment to be escapist, and maybe that's a safe zone that people don't want to deal with the realities of what's going on in the world. And also, you know, are these shows going to feel now more dated in 5-10 years when suddenly, you know, you're watching an episode and they're talking all about Donald Trump? But on the flip side, how do you not, you know, it's these are creative people and this is what they're feeling, right? What you know, and how do you not address it?
And I think the real opportunity here and the thing to watch is how comedy, TV comedy, deals with this president and this administration. I mean, it is, you know, in the same way that Jon Stewart sort of really cemented his status as a celebrity and as a late night power, was during the Iraq War and the Bush administration, as that administration got more serious. I think there are a whole bunch of opportunities here. Obviously, we've seen Saturday Night Live sort of slip into its traditional role of being the opposition party from television, you know, which it sort of was muted a little bit during the Obama administration because Obama was a little bit harder to make fun of. They re-upped it during the campaign, and there were certainly critics of both Hillary and Trump and Republicans. But I think SNL will continue to be doing what it does, and there'll be opportunities. And Samantha Bee obviously has taken complete advantage of the situation and really put herself to be sort of this safe space for sort of protest. But it'll be interesting to see what else we see and what new voices emerge. And you know, Jon Stewart will be back on HBO in a couple months doing an animated thing that's going to be, you know, very much likely to take on Trump. And I'll be also just curious to see what other sort of whether the new media, such as, you know, will there be online resistance, whether Netflix will get into it in a different way. How will comedy find new ways to sort of stand up and sort of speak out against this administration, and whether or not that results in a backlash? There's 45% of the country who's looking at this right now and saying, seriously, guys, you know, you lost, get over it, snowflakes, and accept the reality. And to one degree, they have, you know, there's some truth. If Hillary Clinton had won, there would be a lot of angry Trump supporters, and there'd be many on the left who would be saying, come on, guys, you know, Trump lost, just get on board. And so,
right, but I think
now, has to be.
Now it's not about him winning or losing. Now it's going to be about his policies and the executive orders, and there's going to be some real substance now to actually for people to respond to. So it's you know, not as much about, you know, the fact that he's in the office. It's now going to be about what he's doing and what he did. But yet you bring up a good point about Samantha Bee and you know, obviously John Oliver, Trevor Noah, Seth Meyers. You know, even though we don't have John Stewart, you know, anymore, sort of guiding us through, we still have.
But
that.
We will.
And Colbert.
Back.
And yeah, yeah.
Stewart's coming back. Man. Yeah, he's got his HBO
well,
project.
We'll still we'll see what that show is. It's not going to be the same as seeing John Stewart, in our living room every night. It's going to be this animated show that we're still not quite sure what that's going to be. But Maria and Lena, you talked to Samantha Bee actually, right before the Women's March. What did you guys talk about, and sort of how is she adapting to this? The fact that this is going to be her job now is sort of being a voice of the resistance to some degree.
Yeah, she was in LA for TCA. Her show, as we all know, is doing super well, and they had a panel, and I talked to her for a few minutes afterwards. And my focus really was to see where her head was in terms of women and how women turned out in the election, because, right after the election, she had that really great rant about how the voter turnout had disappointed her, mm-hmm. especially when it came to the numbers of women that had supported Donald Trump. And this was just a couple of days before the Women's March. And I wanted to see, where she was, how she was feeling. And she said, that she had accepted the election results, but she was still really struggling with her feelings about how women had turned out for him, and that she didn't know what to do with that yet. And the reason she was going to the march was because she wanted to have a sense of community and be with like-minded people. And, nobody knew that the march was going to turn out to be how it turned out worldwide then. But, she was really hopeful that she was going to get some optimism and, feelings of solidarity out of it. But she said that she truthfully she hadn't come to terms yet with how she feels about the way it turned out with women. And I asked her, for advice for people who felt as disheartened as she is. And she was like, I really don't have advice. Everybody asked me for that, and I really don't have it. I'm not there yet.
Right, right. Well, another thing, and I had a chance to talk to the producers of Full Frontal, including Joe Miller, who's the showrunner. And another thing that I think all these shows are grappling with is, Donald Trump is now overwhelming everything. He's not the only thing going on in the world. And these shows do a lot of great pieces on other things like Syrian refugees. And there's a lot of things going on locally at the state level, at the local level. And, all that stuff threatens to be sort of completely overshadowed by just nothing but coverage of Donald Trump. And that's going to be a shame, because there's a lot of great stories out there, but the only thing people want to talk about, and maybe that'll change, but so far, so much is going on a federal and executive branch level that it's going to be tough for any other story to sort of sneak in and make a difference. And that, I think, is really frustrating, too. There's not going to be much time to cover anything but the craziness coming out of the White House, I fear, over the next 4 years.
Yeah, I also wonder, moving along a little bit away from the media angle of this too, is what do we think is going to be, how will the public's desire for entertainment content shift during this time, right? I noticed ABC, and some networks are greenlighting a lot of pilots for next season, still dealing in a sort of dystopian world, a little Trumpian. And I wonder, is that really the best thing right now? I wonder if what's really needed and what could really thrive in the next year or two is more escape fair and something
more,
that,
this is us.
More like This Is Us. Right. Exactly. Well, Vultures in Sync. And I do. I think that there's, needs to be some escapism. And again, for anyone listening to this podcast who does not share our political beliefs and is actually very happy about the change in direction in the country, like, we hear you. And it's not everyone is in mourning right now. So it's a careful to note that. But at the same time, I do wonder if Hollywood needs to sort of think about what sort of entertainment content will work right now.
Yeah. So it'd be very interesting to see what actual shows are picked up versus the pilots. And also, when you look sort of bigger picture, what cable's doing, especially, I mean, there's a lot of really interesting escape stuff that is coming, both familiar like Twin Peaks or the Return of Fargo, or of course the new Legion that's coming up in a couple of weeks. So there is going to be a lot of chances to escape. But yeah, you're right. A lot of it still is dark. So are we going to see more blue sky in the coming years? Well, I guess we'll have to stay tuned. We're going to have to take a break right there, though. And when we come back, we'll look ahead at some of the big TV stories you're likely to see in 2017. From KCRW and KCRW.com, this is The Spinoff. And we're back. It's The Spinoff. I'm Michael Schneider of IndieWire and Variety. And with me, as always, Joe Adalian of Vulture.com. And with us this time, Maria Elena Fernandez, also of Vulture. So I'm surrounded by vultures.
By vultures.
Literally. So 2017, so beyond, obviously, Trump is dominating. And it's hard to think about anything else. But there are still a lot of other things and some good things going on in the world of television as well. So let's talk about how TV is evolving in this coming year. You know, one of the big things, of course, is, you know, the continued escalation of the streaming world and more outlets all the time coming online to produce original content. And this is going to be the big year that CBS All Access really gets into the scripted game. Maria Elena, you mentioned The Good Fight earlier. That's going to be the first big show. You know, Star Trek Discovery, which is another show that's been announced by CBS All Access, is coming at some point. It's been delayed a couple of times now. We're waiting to see what we're actually going to see there. But so The Good Fight really is the first opportunity for CBS All Access to join that world of Hulu and Netflix and Amazon, of course. You know, Joe, what do you make? You know, at some point, you know, are there going to be too many streaming services doing original content? Is it going to be worthwhile? Are people going to be spending even more money to you know, subscribe to this service in addition to that service?
At some point, I think we reached peak TV a couple of years ago. But, you know, it's going to be very interesting, especially with CBS All Access. You know, my mom, who was a loyal Good Wife fan and it turned 70 this year, and she was sort of like, so how do I watch this show now? Well, what do I have to do? What, you know, so there are a bunch of Good Wife was a show that did primarily well with people over 50. That was the biggest share of its audience. I mean, it did reach some 18 to 49 year old people. But you know, it's going to be a challenge to see you know, how that transition gets made, not the least of which is because CBS is unlikely to release any sort of ratings information. And so I think that'll be an interesting thing to see. I think we've already settled the question of whether or not shows like this can get media attention. They can. And I think a show that already has an established audience and a whole core of reporters who've covered it over the years, I mean, it's going to get some buzz and is, depending upon how good it is, whether or not we'll see if it's good buzz or bad buzz. I think we're going to continue to see just a more explosion. You know, Apple, after a couple years of saying that they weren't really going to juice scripted shows, well, now they are, in addition to, you know, James Corden's Carpool Karaoke coming to Apple TV.
Right,
and they're going to try to do one or two scripted shows, sort of a boutique, which is fine. So, you know, but that's also a value-added network, right? People, you know, that's people who do that will be already subscribing to Apple Music, and they sort of get that in the same way people who subscribe to Amazon for Prime Delivery get Amazon Prime Video. We're also going to see a bigger push, I think, into short form content in 2017. You've got Sami Falvey, who for a decade oversaw development and then ran comedy at ABC and helped, you know, bring some really signature half hour shows to network TV, from Modern Family all the way up to Speechless this year. You know, she's going to be launching something that's a joint venture between Awesomeness TV and Verizon that's geared towards the mobile generation. And
yeah,
it's going to be a subscription service, and you'll pay to get something, and God knows what it's going to be.
Right,
but
right.
There's going to be a ways, you know, maybe just to get you to subscribe to Verizon as opposed to AT&T.
But well, hold on, just to jump in there, though, you know, let's talk about Verizon real quick, because they just let go of a whole bunch of people at Go90, which was a service that, you know, again, they were trying to do original content. They did a version of The Runner, you know, the reality show that had been in development for decades.
But that actually aired,
no one watched
quote unquote?
Yeah. Yeah.
Who knew?
So
who knew?
You didn't even know, Joe. So
we were covering that story. You and I were covering that back in 2000.
Yeah, yeah. It was Ben Affleck and Matt Damon's reality show. But no one knew what Go90 was. I bet, you know, most people listening probably don't know what Go90 is. It still exists. They're still doing some original content. But that's one of the challenges, of course, of all these services, is because there are so many now and we are in peak TV. How do you make a difference? How do you cut through?
CBS will premiere The Good Fight on the network,
yeah,
that first episode. And then, you know, you're supposed to go and watch the rest online. I mean, I think if anyone can draw people in, it's Christine Baranski, because people really did love that character very much. But I agree, it's a new world. I don't know.
And that's the difference. You know, at least when you have a linear network, you still have a, you know, large tent to at least market to, that some of these new services don't have.
And I think that's going to be one of the big stories of 2017, early 2018, is, I think, we'll be watching to see what happens with CBS All Access, which continues to have an absolutely awful name, but whatever. and Amazon really doesn't have its own special name. It's just Amazon. But I, you know, you've got to imagine that NBC is going to do something similar with the Comcast empire behind them and all the different cable networks of the Comcast Universal fiefdom. You know that they're going to the whole thing is we're going to see the continuing transition of the broadcast networks from being just these big over-the-air networks to sort of a service where it's directly marketed to consumers. People want to watch shows without commercials. They're going to start getting more used to having sort of a la carte fees as they ditch cable and sort of try to make a go of it in the app world. And these are brands that need to make the jump.
They already have CISO. I mean, NBC Universal is kind of dip their toe in.
With all due respect to the great people in CISO, and you know, they've done some interesting comedy things. A few of their shows ended up on top 10 lists. Nothing about it creatively. From a financial standpoint, CISO makes zero sense to me. I don't understand why they're spending their money on that. You don't need to launch another brand when you've got the NBC brand. So maybe CISO gets folded into it, some of that content, whatever. But, you know, you've got the NBC brand. People know what NBC is. They have affiliates. They have to watch. A lot of people are going to continue to cancel their, cable bundles, and they're going to want to start adding apps. And you better think that, something like NBC, you know, they announced Will and Grace. And even though there's been absolutely nothing said about it, I would not at all be surprised if Will and Grace is something that launches on an app in 2018 as opposed to on the network or does a shared window the way that Good Fight and Star Trek will. ABC has, you know, started adding some content on the comedy side on their on-demand services. But, you know, ABC and Disney, like, why would they not? You know,
all still investors in Hulu. So, you know, part of that is you've got Hulu.
Yeah, and some of that will be in part of that, and that can be a transition thing, and maybe the price for Hulu starts going up. There's nothing that says Hulu continues to cost what it costs now. In the same way that you can add, I think, Showtime to your Hulu subscription, maybe in a little while longer you're going to have to add money to get, you know, some of the networks, and it'll be a little more bundled. I think that's a real interesting thing that we've got to keep an eye on is how linear networks manage this transition. I think they all know that they need to be producing programming that people are going to want to subscribe to. That's why you've got TBS doing all they're doing in comedy, not to get big ratings, but to try to develop them as a brand that people actually want to pay for, as it just sort of casually watch when there are reruns of Big Bang Theory on.
Well, let me ask about another brand. And Maria Elena, I want to bring you into this because I'm curious your thoughts on this. You know, another big story to look at in 2017 is now, at least in the immediate future, CBS and Viacom are not going to merge. You know, that was one of the big question marks. So for now, Viacom is on its own. They've got a new team now. Doug Herzog is gone. So, you know, the new team in place needs to resurrect some of these brands that have really been in trouble. So there have been a lot of executive changes at MTV especially. You know, VH1 is one of the few sort of bright spots right now over there, but they're struggling with MTV, with Comedy Central. To me, Comedy Central, I think there's still an opportunity to sort of revitalize that brand. You know, you just need a couple of really good shows with some new stars, the next Key and Peele, you know, the next Amy Schumer, and you can bring that around. But what can you do with MTV? Is that a brand that's like just dead? Is there a way to save MTV?
Bring back the videos.
spoken like a true Gen Xer.
No, that's such a great question and problem. And if you could solve it, you would get a lot of money.
Then I shouldn't be here, right?
I mean, they've tried to become their own little CW, right, for really young people. And it sort of worked and didn't entirely. I don't know that MTV has figured out what to be in this world.
Yeah. And honestly, it's the big problem is this whole new generation, not only millennials, but the younger people, younger than millennials. What is that generation called, by the way? Is that generation like AA now?
Z. Or we, Z, I believe.
Is it Z?
Generation Z.
You know, MTV doesn't mean anything to them.
Right.
Right. But maybe MTV can seek inspiration from its sister network, you know, BET, which is part of the Viacom MTV Networks family. Has had enormous success hyper-focusing on African-American audiences and young women. You know, America's Next Top Model, a CW brand, which was before that a UPN brand, is now having a nice little renaissance. And by the way, it's being simulcast now on MTV and BET on Monday nights. And it's combined doing better demos among millennial women than almost anything on broadcast TV on Monday nights, except, of course, for The Bachelor, which is bigger than both of them combined. You know, so I think the thing is, MTV needs to figure out what it wants to be beyond just sort of the young people's network. I think that doesn't cut it anymore. I think you need to get more specific. You know, Comedy Central is trying that too a little bit, and they've had some success, but they also need to constantly re-evolve. And yeah, it's I think it's a really interesting question. How do these sort of legacy cable networks transition to the non-linear world? And that's what's, they sort of were hit the hardest, all the MTV networks, not VH, not BET, because it wasn't specific. But, you know, it's a big question.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, at least, you know, VH1 sort of found a niche as well, which is sort of ironic because I don't think VH1 ever really knew what it was for years. But it is also sort of targeting, you know, young, diverse millennials in a way that MTV couldn't quite figure out because, you know, I think, you know, MTV has so much more legacy that it's trying to live up to, and it sort of still wants to be, you know, something for everyone of a certain generation. But, you know, these days, there's so many different outlets. There's a little something for everyone out there that, you know, MTV's kind of running into the same problem that the broadcast networks are, which is, you know, it's just hard to be a linear network appealing to everyone in an age where, you know, everyone's got their own network. Everyone's programming their own, you know, choices by, you know, through VOD or through Netflix or what have you.
Yeah, Freeform has also struggled a little bit. They're a little bit better because they're a little more focused, but they've also had some problems too.
Well, AMC and FX, you know, obviously riding a strong wave, continuing to ride a strong wave. AMC dinged a little bit as Walking Dead, you know, starts to decline in the ratings. Mm-hmm. Still a monster hit, though. We talked about that a little bit on our last episode. But what's your forecast for FX? I mean, it looks like they're running into a big year.
They seem unstoppable. I mean, they have the huge feud coming out soon that everyone's very excited about. And those of us who've seen episodes can attest to them being really great. Feud is Ryan Murphy's new anthology series for FX. This one looks at the relationship between Joan Crawford and Bette Davis, and it stars Jessica Lange and Susan Sarandon, and it premieres in March. But they also have The Return of the Americans that people are very excited about. They have Legion, which is their first foray into superhero land, and people are super excited about that.
Right, from Noah Hawley, who also is behind Fargo. So,
and that season, the next season of Fargo is also something that people are excited about with Ewan McGregor, Carrie Coon. It's got a great cast.
Yeah.
So I don't see FX the streak.
Yeah, I'll forgive them for having to push Atlanta season two into 2018.
Yeah.
That's a bummer, but they do have a lot of other great stuff coming.
And also the follow-ups to American Crime Story have been pushed to 2018.
Right, right.
Both of them.
Yes.
Both of them now. Really interesting. Well, that's a little risky, I think, for FX, by the way, because, well, first of all, it seems to be like another new trend, which is like 18-month waits between seasons. It's like you expect it was something big and ambitious like Fargo, but now you're seeing, you know, Master of None on Netflix is going to take an 18-month break. So there's we really are in the new age of TV shows as movies, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're almost getting Star Wars movies more frequently than seasons of some hit comedies on these streaming networks or cable networks. But, you know, I agree with you, Maria Lynn. I think FX is really poised to have another amazing year, certainly from a critical point of view. I think there's a chance that Legion could break out and be a big hit in that space. I do worry, or not worry, but I wonder about how Feud does. I wonder if the Ryan Murphy brand outside of a horror genre, a true hard horror genre like American Horror Story was, or something big and pre-sold like OJ Married with amazing critical acclaim. Even if Feud gets some good reviews, I don't know if Susan Sarandon and Jessica Lange are guaranteed, you know, ratings catnip in 2017, especially among the, you know, the under 40 crowd that FX really tries to hyper target towards. I think they'll clearly will get buzz and maybe and probably guaranteed to get Emmy nominations.
Yeah.
So in the big scheme of things, it can be a major win for FX doesn't need everything to be a big giant, you know, rating success. Look at The Americans, for example. So they can win, but I'll be curious if, you know, the new Ryan Murphy joint for 2017 can match the success he had in 2016 with American Crime Series.
I'm not too worried about that. I think you're right in that it's you know, maybe it's a little slightly older skewing just because of the subject matter. But again, when you look at awards and you look at the buzz and you look at the kind of interest that they're going to get, It's definitely gonna, you know, fill that void that not having American Crime Story this year is gonna have. It seems like you know, sort of vintage strong Ryan Murphy. So I'm not too worried about FX.
Let's check back. I'm not worried about FX either. Let the record state that. But I think we should check back here in 4 months and look at the numbers. I'm just very curious to you. By the way, let's talk about AMC real briefly. I think AMC also, you know, they continue to be in a strong position as well. You know, they got a little overshadowed by FX. But when you think of the fact that Walking Dead is still massive, when you think that Fear the Walking Dead is doing fine, when you think Preacher did a decent number, not huge, you know, and they've got a couple of shows, I think, I can't remember, but coming this year that look really promising. It'll be very interesting. I wonder, guys, do you think that AMC should get into comedy? Does anyone think that AMC should sort of try to get into that space in a different way? Or, well, are they limiting themselves by being just drama? I wonder if they're sort of repeating themselves.
Well, you know, it's a good question because, you know, part of the AMC family includes IFC. And you know, IFC just did a big deal with Funny or Die. So I think they're kind of focused on maybe siloing comedy there. And they still want to build up the IFC brand. So in some ways, I think it's smart to not muddle they're different brands. You know, they've got some really distinct brands right now at AMC Networks between AMC and BBC America, Sundance
TV.
Nobody's
watching, though. Nobody's watching IFC. Those numbers are tiny.
Well, you know, they need to build it up. They need to find a way to build it up, and maybe this Funny or Die relationship will help.
I say fold it in. Fold it in.
Well, you know, and that brings up another good point about where we're going as a business.
Right, consolidation.
And as we start to talk about skinny bundles, I mean, look, NBC is slowly getting rid of their networks. They just sliced off Esquire Network. And it's interesting these days, they don't even try to sell these networks anymore. When you shut down a network, it's just dead. It's gone.
Wow.
So, we're slowly seeing that attrition because especially NBC had too many networks that looked too much alike. So I applaud them for sort of slimming down a little bit.
Which is why I think CISO will eventually fold into, you know, NBCSO or whatever it becomes like in a couple of years when they start charging $6 a month to get, you know, all of SNL and everything else. We'll see.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. By the way, CISO still has every episode of Saved by the Bell. So, boom.
Well, there you go. Why aren't you subscribing, people? Call now, 1-800-CISO.
Well, guys, we're at that point in the show now where we go around the room and we each download the show or story that's top of mind this month. And Marielena, what are you looking forward to?
Well, it's not what I look forward to. It's what I just watched that I highly recommend for those looking for escapist fare, especially. Amazon has a terrific show on that just premiered a couple of weeks ago called Sneaky Pete. That was created by Bryan Cranston and David Shore. And Bryan Cranston has a part in it, but Giovanni Ribisi is the star. And it's really terrific. It's about a con artist and a very strange family that he embeds himself into. And it's got a lot of twists and turns and ends in a very cliffhangery season two kind of way. And they did renew it, so... You know, it wouldn't be a waste of anyone's time to spend time with that show. It is very bingeable.
Yeah, what I've seen of it so far, I do enjoy. Joe, how about you?
Well, you know, we lost a massive TV legend in Mary Tyler Moore, who was just one of literally the all-time greats. I almost think she should have passed away in 2016 along with every other legend, it feels somehow, but she can now be the first big legend of 2017. But she was just so massively important. I think it's weird. I think that... for a lot of younger viewers, listeners right now, they probably aren't as tuned into Mary Tyler Moore. She did not stay as current and active as, say, Betty White did or any of the Golden Girls. She hadn't really had a hit in about 25 years. But she really is iconic and wonderful. And obviously, you should try to find episodes of the Mary Tyler Moore Show on DVD, or the first three seasons are on Hulu. Somebody needs to get all the seasons on a streaming network. It's sort of ridiculous that they're not. But I also recommend, if you just want a few moments of joy in your life, go onto the YouTube machine, put in Mary Tyler Moore variety show or variety special, and you'll find some of her stuff from the 70s and when she did some, she had a couple of different variety specials and one show that she did called Mary, where Michael Keaton and David Letterman were in her cast. And you'll see some great singing, some great quirky comedy, and you just see sort of the spirit of this woman divorced from the written word. And this was somebody who was a brilliant TV executive who helped found MTM Enterprises, which with her former husband, who also died last year, Grant Tinker, and sort of, you know, really was a great independent producer. But she was also a show person. You know, she wasn't just a great actress who could bring comedy to life that was written for her. She just had I guess use an old fashioned term, joie de vivre. She was just delightful. And seeing her sing, you know, I watched yesterday a clip of her singing With a Little Luck by Paul McCartney and Wings with David Letterman and Michael Keaton. And it was just awesome. And do yourself a favor and rejoice in who she was be glad we had her.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, by the way, some great film roles, too, including Ordinary People. Mm-hmm. And just,
of course.
Just a couple weeks ago, I happened to watch it's the 20th anniversary of Flirting with Disaster, the movie that she did with David O. Russell. And she has
Taye Leone, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, she steals every scene that she's in. Mm. So, you know,
sure.
Fantastic up until the end. So I'm going to end things by, first off, again, hate to bring up politics one last time, but with the environment under—
You've switched roles.
Yeah, with the environment under attack these days, I think something like Planet Earth 2 is more important than ever. And the new version of Planet Earth, which, of course, was a big hit in 2006, is coming to BBC America. It actually premieres next month, February 18, on BBC America. I've watched the first couple episodes with my kids, actually, and— it's kind of escapist television. It's also important television. It's beautifully done. Some of the technology that's been, introduced and innovated over the past 10 years, really, makes this thing one of the most stunning documentaries I've ever seen, especially, Real Earth, nature documentaries I've ever seen. They've done a fantastic job. David Attenborough is the narrator, of course, legendary Sir David Attenborough, and his British, accent and his insight into what we're seeing just adds to it as well. And it's a real visual treat. It's also just must-see TV, especially, given, the attacks that we apparently are seeing now on the environment. I think it's, really a wake-up call that the Earth is worth preserving and saving. So,
is it sort of the Godfather 2 of nature documentaries, just sort of like even better than the original?
Perfectly put, Mr. Joe Adalian. As always, thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Miguel.
And thank you, Maria Elena.
Thank you so much.
That's Joe Adalian, the West Coast editor of Vulture.com, and Maria Elena, TV reporter at Vulture. And I'm Michael Schneider of IndieWire and Variety. And that's it for this edition of The Spinoff. This podcast is produced by Caitlin Parker, and Ray Guarna is our technical director. You can hear past episodes of The Spinoff on iTunes, Stitcher, or pretty much anywhere you can download podcasts. You can also hear it online at kcrw.com and on demand with the KCRW smartphone app. And until next time, this is The Spinoff, signing off.